Welcome to the Frequency 49 Show, a brand new San Francisco 49ers podcast from a British point of view. I'm Paul McDonald alongside Deepak Gohill, Brian Davis and Gary Rutledge. Hey guys.
Hey Paul.
Hello Paul.
How's it going?
It's great to be together, isn't it? And actually, we've worked so hard. We've worked monumentally hard at getting this podcast on the go over the past sort of week and a half to 14 days, haven't we? It's been absolutely manic.
Yeah, we started off a week and a half ago with nothing, and after a good week talking about getting a logo, I think we've got a great thing, and hopefully this pod's going to be even better than the logo. Yeah,
and I think it's worth pointing out that we've had help from lots of people with logos and other things, and we're really appreciative of the effort and the support that people have given us so far just to get to this stage. And it was something that we were thinking, should we do, shouldn't we do? But once we found out there's so much overwhelming support, we felt that we owed it to people to try and produce something.
I couldn't agree more. Do you know, I was going through all the different logos before. A logo sounds such a simple thing, doesn't it? We went through 37 versions of one logo before we actually finalized one. That was sort of the highlight of the past week and a half's prep, was we finally got a logo.
Yeah, I actually deleted the best part of about 60-odd pictures off of my WhatsApp chat earlier, of which I think 50-odd were new logo ideas.
Oh, but we are here. We've finally got to the day, and we are recording the first of the Frequency 49 shows. It's an absolutely fantastic feeling. It's been quite nervous, actually, especially running up today with it being something brand new. But we are all here together now, and we're here to take a look at, well, to take a look at yesterday's game, and what a game to come back to review. 25-20 win over the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, it's definitely nice to start talking about a win.
Yes.
Yeah, let's get the podcast off on a positive note with a nice winning Monday morning feeling.
Yeah, yeah, it was a good feeling, wasn't it?
It's a beautiful feeling, and an ugly win is much better than a beautiful loss. I'm so pumped that we managed to get this win.
Yeah, it was a little bit squeaky bum time at the end, but yeah, we pulled out the win, and you know, it gets us to 2-4, so there's still hope for the season.
Yeah, It was great to watch it. The whole sort of game developed really well, isn't it? The 49ers, of course, led from beginning to end, or more or less beginning to end, except for the first couple of minutes where it was 0-0. But the first field goal put the 49ers ahead, and then they led throughout the game from there. We saw some interesting things from Kaepernick. He was certainly more adventurous, wasn't he, in the game?
I think he was more adventurous in terms of from a throwing aspect, but obviously a little bit more reserved in terms of running, which I think might come down to the work he's done with Kurt Warner. Obviously, as much as I love Kurt Warner, he's not a prolific runner, and it's good to see Cap going through his reads and going for that long pass.
Yeah. Mm.
It shows what he can do if he's afforded a little bit of time in the pocket. It's definitely some of the plays I thought were designed to try and build confidence in him. He showed a nice touch at times, and there was a lot to like from yesterday. You know, I'm trying not to get too carried away because I don't think Baltimore were that great of a team. If you look at how we've come from the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, it was a case of kind of how the mighty have fallen, really, in the matchup from yesterday to where we were a couple of years ago together. But I think if you take away the performances against the Cardinals and the Steelers this season, he's had a pretty decent year, I think.
I agree, and I think to some degree the schedule's been kind to us. We've played two teams that aren't terrific, and that's okay because we are in a rebuilding phase. And I think what was especially encouraging was that Kaepernick actually took the time to get into a rhythm and then do something a little bit more creative, a little bit more adventurous. And Baltimore and New York, okay, they're not great, we're not great, but at the end of the day, we can only play who's in front of us, and there's absolutely nothing wrong in Kaepernick exploiting those sorts of teams to rebuild his confidence. And I think, as you touched upon, Brian, his confidence is the one thing that really needs a boost right now. And we've pointed fingers at the O-line and many different variables, but, you know, he had a reasonably solid game despite a weak offensive line and all the other variables that we've talked about that have not been apparent this season. So I think there's a lot of positives, and it's good to see his confidence coming back. As you know, I'm not his greatest fan, but I think you have to give people credit where it's due, and he had a pretty good game.
We asked for some of the group's followers for questions that they would like us to go through on this show today. Gavin Sutton brought up a question that ties in with everything now. Is Kaepernick showing true signs of improvement, or have we just played two poor defences back-to-back? I'm assuming meaning Baltimore and then last week against New York as well.
I think there's a bit of both in that. We have played two awful teams, but at the end of the day, you'd rather have your quarterback play well against awful teams than play terrible against terrible teams. And I think the fact that he's building his confidence, doesn't matter if it's against weaker teams, it can only help the team moving forward. You know, is Kaepernick the real deal? We've seen what he's capable of doing. We've seen him play, you know, decent games this season. This was a decent game. Pittsburgh wasn't a decent game. All his numbers came in garbage time. But this was a decent game. He played okay. I think, to answer Gavin's question, I think there's big chunks of both in there, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, I think it's nice to see him taking snaps under center rather than always lining up in a shotgun formation, because that just seems to make him want to run because he's got that space in front of him. Seems when he's under shotgun, when he's under center, he is starting to go through those progressions, and as we've seen, paid off with some of the long passes to Smith and Bruce Miller.
Yeah.
And working under center, it obviously sets up the play action as well. Well, that's when it works the best, obviously, when it's, you know, he's under the center. And that could be a sign that we may be moving towards more of a West Coast offense with Kaepernick as, you know, as the quarterback now. And to be honest, it's in center or shotgun, it's whatever it takes, to be honest. If Jeep Chris can come up with, you know, the schemes and the plays, and the O-line can give Kaepernick the time that he needs, you know, he could be under center every play if that's what works. I do think that Jim Tonsula needs to make a decision at the right guard spot. You know, is he going to play Tiller or is he going to play DV? I'm not sure we can really be consistent if you're splitting the snaps between two guys on the O-line. But I do think yesterday that the pass protection was better, but the run blocking maybe not so great. So I think maybe he needs to look at that and get Tiller in, because, you know, the longer that Kaepernick's got time behind, you know, that O-line, as he showed, you know, on Sunday night, the better he's going to be.
One of the areas that the team is still suffering with is clearly red zone offense. When we get down there, is it just the compressed field that's causing the problem?
We've had this problem since when Alex Smith was quarterback. We've always had red zone woes. I think it's probably worse this year because we don't have the high octane offense in terms of running. When you've got a shorter field, it's much harder for a quarterback to get an open receiver. You know, this is when you need somebody who's really efficient at running that slant or a swing pass to a running back. And it's clearly obvious that we can't punch it inside the red zone with the ground game. When we saw that, we had to settle for threes when Cap was inside the red zone, and that's purely because the field is so much shorter, so much more compact. Cap literally had to work out where he was going to put the ball. And again, this is all part of Kaepernick's development. He needs to release the ball a lot quicker than he already does. And I think that's a fair critique.
Yeah, I think he needs to be a bit more decisive and pull the trigger sometimes in the red zone rather than maybe kind of hanging onto the ball and making or not making the right decision and sort of taking a loss or overthrowing someone in the end zone. And I think a lot of it comes down to the play calling as well. We need to be a bit more or a whole lot more aggressive, I think, in the red zone. Sometimes I think we can be way too conservative or even maybe a little bit paranoid and skittish at times that we're aware that there's a problem going into the red zone and everyone clams up and we end up kicking the field goal. And I think too often in the past as well, we've seen that we find something that works and they'll use it a couple of times and then they won't use it again for the rest of the game for some reason.
Yeah.
And they kind of move away from it and all of a sudden they're running it on first down, running it on second down, and we're in a hole at you know, 3rd and 9 or 3rd and 11 or something like that, and we're putting ourselves into holes when earlier in the game we were, you know, moving along and moving the chains nicely. I think they need to stick with something and make the other team stop it, and once they can stop it, then maybe think about where you go next.
Yeah, and it is interesting because I think in the past we've always blamed it on Greg Roman and his sort of lack of focus for converting third and fourth downs. But I was watching a bit of the Buffalo Bills game last night, and it was interesting to see how often he was doing completely different plays on third and fourth down. So it is maybe a San Francisco thing that we just haven't, you know, got that vision to convert.
We've had another question in from Kat Varley Vittorino out in California, I believe. So hello, Kat. She wants to know, why has the offensive play calling gotten away from the hurry-up offense? Even under 2 minutes, the two-minute drill just isn't being used.
I think there was... Okay, this wasn't quite a two-minute drill, but coming into the close of the first half, you know, we had two timeouts, 40 seconds, and I believe it was a touchback. That would have been a really good opportunity for us to extend that lead with 40 seconds and two timeouts. It was a real opportunity, I think, for us to extend the lead. And not only that, we would have kicked off in the second half, so Baltimore would have been receiving. So that was a really great opportunity. But, and this is just my opinion, we called entirely the wrong plays. If I remember correctly, there were three running plays that just went nowhere. And it was obviously apparent that we were too afraid to go for the long ball in case it got intercepted, which would be effectively a punt, but the side effect of that would be that Kaepernick's confidence would have been shot. But I think we need to show a bit more ambition in our play calling. And Kat's right. Have we ever seen this team do a two-minute drill, a legit two-minute drill, i.e. take the ball, march it 80 yards in 2 minutes with a couple of timeouts? I can't remember us doing that. We have had really good game-sapping drives before, but in the clutch, a two-minute drive, I can't remember the last time I saw a 49er offense conduct one successfully with a touchdown.
Yeah, you're completely right. I mean, with that 40-odd seconds left, we did have the chance to go for a long pass. I mean, Cap had already completed to Torrey Smith for the touchdown, the long touchdown, and the big pass to Bruce Miller. So his confidence must have been high at that point. And it was disappointing just to see Hyde sort of run it into the ground for three plays.
If we switched our tack to the defensive side of the ball for a little bit, Navarro Bowman, 15 tackles on the day yesterday. But there were no sacks, no defensive sacks, and that hasn't been for two consecutive games now.
Navarro Bowman is not the same Navarro Bowman that we know and love. I think the injury has taken maybe a step out from his game. And I think offenses exploit his difficulty in covering the pass. I do think they pick holes on that. I think generally the absence of a pass rush is why we had two huge calamities against both Pittsburgh, who have got a really poor passing offense, and against Arizona. Our pass rush has been decimated as well. You know, we can keep it together, but I think our defense has got more questions than answers. We pretty much played without a secondary against the New York Giants. We're in a similar situation where we had to hang on to win the game, but Eli Manning wasn't throwing darts. He was just throwing to who he wanted to, because he knew that there was no 49er pass defense in place that can stop him from moving the ball upfield. And as the Ravens game wore on and on, now Flacco he's not an elite QB, okay, let's get that straight, but he has enough to be able to shred a secondary if the secondary is weak. I think we got very, very lucky that we won that game, because I think a more adept quarterback might well have punished us, and we wouldn't have been able to guard that lead based on purely our pass defense.
Yeah, what we're seeing now is the gap left by Justin Smith and Alden Smith. They're, you know, those guys not being there are not creating the gaps for Bowman to sort of come downhill and penetrate the gaps that are in that those guys are causing on the O line of the opposition to come in and make tackles in the backfield or make tackles at the line of scrimmage. You know, Aaron Lynch is getting double teamed, and there's nobody on the other side of the line that can cause teams problems, and that is hurting, you know, the whole defense, because you know, wide receivers are burning our secondary because we're getting absolutely zero pressure up front. And I don't think we can underestimate the holes that Justin Smith and Alden Smith, in not being at the team now, are making on our defensive side of the football.
I think it can be also said that, you know, we did get a couple of interceptions. The first interception we made was a hideous, hideous gift of a throw by Flacco. I when I saw that, I couldn't actually believe he was still going to throw that ball, because it wasn't going to a Baltimore receiver. There was only one place it was going to go. Going to go to one of three different 49 defensive backs and nobody else, you know. So that made us look a little bit better than we are as a passing defense.
It was a wide open pass, wasn't it? It was like, no, you just thrown that straight out the 49ers.
Yeah, it was like it was a punt yeah. On a throw.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely was. And that was the one that had, was it a 45-yard gain off that interception?
Yeah, I think it was. Was it
Kenneth Hackett returned it, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Speaking of punts, because it was just brought up there, punt returns and fair catches. We still seem to have an issue with this. It's something that grates on me, actually. Why are we calling for fair catches inside the 20-yard line?
I think in the 20 is fair enough, but when it starts getting down inside the 10 and inside the 5, then I've got an issue with that. If you're going to call a fair catch at the 15-yard line, so be it. We'll work with that field. But when the guys are back there doing it at the sort of 5, 6, 7, 8-yard line, I'd rather them see, you know, I'd rather them move forward and hope that the ball goes through the end zone, and let's start again at the 20. I don't see the point in trying to catch it at the, like I say, 7, 8-yard line and just stop. Yeah, at least try and make an effort from there.
I do wonder whether Jarryd Hayne's been a victim of his own sort of publicity, because he's completely a different player to what we saw in the preseason. I know he wasn't playing against many first team special teams, but it just doesn't seem to be the same player. And I don't know whether it's because teams have studied what he was doing in the preseason and put an extra pressure on him, but he's fumbled, what, 3 or 4 times now in the first few games, and that is quite worrying.
And I think in the game of rugby as well, the position and the role that he was playing in there, he was constantly getting involved in the game. You know, he'd be involved, tackled, move on, you know, and then he'd get the ball again, move on. He's constantly involved in the game. When he's coming in cold as a punt returner or as a kick returner, he might not see the field again for another 25 minutes or so. And I think someone who's trying to adjust from the game of rugby where you're always handling the ball, it must be quite difficult at times. I know that, you know, these are professional athletes and they should be prepared all the time, but when you're used to maybe handling a ball all the time in your previous sport, to then trying to come in and make a play every 20, 25 minutes or so in real time, must be a little bit more difficult and a little bit more of not playing how he's used to, you know, being involved all the time, if that kind of makes any sense.
It makes absolute sense, Bright, to me. I mean, with Jarryd Hayne, I agree with everybody who says he's a victim of his own success. And I think with so many negative things going on with the 49ers, he's the one positive thing that everybody's latched onto. And I think we need to be cognizant of the fact that this is actually not his sport. He's still learning the game, you know. And he has had a couple of fumbles, but there's so much expectation placed upon him. And this is all part of the very steep learning curve that guy is going through right now. I'm not saying he's not a good punt returner. I think he's a great special teamer for us. But Jarryd Hayne is an interesting point, because right now, with Carlos Hyde injured, Reggie Bush injured, he could well take the load of the running offense. And he's a great north-to-south runner, because that's how he plays in rugby. This will be a real baptism of fire for him in the National Football League to see how he does when he manages some of the load of the running offense in addition to his responsibilities on special teams.
I think we have to remember that this is a guy that first put on a set of pads and a helmet 5 weeks before the start of the season.
Yeah, exactly.
As much as these guys are professional and they've been paid lots and lots of money to play this game, they are still human and they are going to be subject to nerves. They are going to be subject to the sweaty palms or the, you know, the slight mistakes. luckily, on the whole, these haven't been too costly for us. And we can only hope that he can sort of get a handle on this before it gets any worse and become the player that everyone is hoping he will be.
But in my mind, he really is an asset to this football team right now. Anything that brings a bit of positivity to this club is got to be good for us right now.
Yeah, and he's well advanced in his role in the team than probably where many of us thought he was going to be at the start of the season. I think if we were being honest, we were all probably looking at thinking, well, yeah, he's probably going to be on the practice squad. And if we're in a desperation kind of injury crisis hit season, you know, come October, November time, then we might see him come into the team, into a, you know, maybe a losing team and be active. So for him to be on that starting 53 at the start of the season was way ahead of where probably many of us thought that he was going to be when it was announced, you know, earlier in the year that this is where he was going to be coming.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think with Reggie Bush's injuries, he's had to be pushed to the forefront, and he's not had that chance to learn from the other players, the more experienced players around him.
Let's have another question, shall we? Hello to David Foster, who has said, we knew this season probably wasn't going to be one of our best, but did you guys think it would start off so bad? I would ask, has it really started off so bad?
No, I don't think so. I mean, if you look at the games we've played, I think before the start of the season, with all the losses we'd suffered, I think you probably would have said Arizona and Green Bay were going to be losses. New York could have gone either way, as could have Pittsburgh. So where we're sat at now, we're probably only one win away from where we all thought we might be.
I agree. And I also think that question you can only answer depending on what your expectations are of the team. I know front office of saying that we've actually strengthened and we're stronger than we were before because we've reloaded. Clearly, that's not true. We have had to rebuild. We've had a decimated team. This is the one positive thing that's going for the 49ers right now. We have a huge, huge amount of talent on the team that's capable of winning football games, you know. So if you're looking at it holistically in terms of a rebuilding team, it's not too shabby. You know, we've won a couple of games. It's not the end of the world. We're looking to strengthen. We're looking to do different things. We're looking to win football games. And I think during a rebuild, what the fans want to see more than anything, apart from a win, is the effort and the commitment from the team. And I think we're seeing that now. You know, I really do see that the players want it, the fans want it. But if we didn't get it like we didn't against New York, it was okay because we gave it everything. We left everything on the field. And as long as we continue to play like that, it can only help the rebuild.
Yeah, my expectations for this season were kind of set very, very low based on the worst off season in living memory. So we're kind of on track, I guess, for the kind of season that I was thinking we were going to have, you know, back in the summer. I certainly wasn't expecting to have gotten blown out the way that we did in Arizona and in Pittsburgh. I'd have liked to have thought that we'd have at least sort of hung tough with them for the majority of the game and maybe pushed them a bit closer than what we did. But I don't think we're going to be playoff bound by any stretch of the imagination. But as long as we can show progress on the season and the world isn't falling in on us as it probably thought at times over the last 4 or 5 weeks. And just like Deepak said there, you know, we're rebuilding. So the expectation levels have to be adjusted accordingly. And anything on top of a 5-6 win season this season is going to be a bonus, I think, and people should try and embrace the positives from that, move forward and look to build in again next season through free agency and the draft and see what happens with the coaching staff moving forward.
Giving a quick look forward then to Thursday's game, or just before we do, Carlos Hyde has an injury or a partial injury to his foot. Do we think he's likely to be playing on Thursday?
Yes.
Yeah, I think he'll be playing. I did think that his season was over when he went down on Sunday night, though.
Mm.
I think he'll be playing. It's anybody's guess as to, A, physically how well he can play, and B, if he'll finish the game. Mm. And here's the thing, we don't want it to be an RG3 situation where Shanahan played him until he just had a couple of sinews left on his leg, and he couldn't stand up. We need to make a decision about preserving the health of our running back, because we're going to need him for next season, you know.
Yeah, definitely the long term.
Yeah, this is where we need to see if Davis and Hayne, or the pair of them between them, can be a nice, competent number two for Hyde, so that we can take some of that pressure away from him.
Yeah.
And I do think he has a running style that could lead to a short career in the NFL, and he's taken an absolute pounding since week one already. So we really do need to be looking at Davis and Hayne now, and kind of try and get those guys in and spell Hayne for a series or two through the game, so that he can, you know, get some air and some treatment and stuff on the sidelines, in the same way that, you know, Hyde did that for Gore over the last season or two.
But Brian, it begs the question, why would we utilize Hyde in such a way, knowing that he's got an inferior offensive line to the one Frank Gore had? Why would we do that and expect the same results? You know, all we're really going to do then is beat up our running back with nothing to show for it.
But to be fair, at the start, the first game, he was completely explosive, wasn't he? And I think that kind of set the expectation level, you know, with him blasting through Minnesota's defense.
But Minnesota were bad that day, Gary. They're not going to play that badly this season.
Oh, yeah, I completely agree. But I think, as you said earlier on, you can only, you know, play what's in front of you.
Yeah.
And, you know, the fact that he had such a good start has meant we've kind of continued down that path. And don't forget, Reggie Bush is still lurking around in the background somewhere. And hopefully
that's pretty much all he is doing.
But we'll see him. You know, he's one of these players that you get six or seven games a season out of him, and probably three of those he's completely explosive. So, the best is yet to come from him, hopefully.
Well, yeah.
Okay, David Young and Kiefer Meredith have both asked the same sort of question. Thursday night, key to victories, guys.
I think we've got to treat this game as any other game. There can't be any thoughts of Thanksgiving revenge after they ate the turkeys on the field at Levi's, or this kind of grudge match. We just need to go into it. You know, we've come off the back of a really good victory. We were unlucky against the Giants. We just need to continue maintaining that pace and, you know, making that slow progress, and just, you know, not think it's Seattle.
Very much agree with what Gary said. I also think we've got an opportunity to take advantage of Seattle's offensive plan, which is, believe it or not, even more porous than ours. And this presents an opportunity for our linebackers to really zero in on Russell Wilson, because the difference between us having a poor offensive line and Seattle having an O-line that's poor is that their quarterback can actually extend plays, whereas Kaepernick struggles to do that. So if we can prevent Russell Wilson from extending those plays and making big gains on the ground or improvising, I think we have a chance. And I'm actually going to go out there and think that I think we can beat them. I truly do.
Yeah, as daft as it sounds, we almost need to try and keep Wilson in the pocket.
Yeah.
because if we do, his vision is so much more limited. But once he's out of that pocket and he starts improvising, that's when he can really do the damage and cause headaches and rack up the points for teams very, very quickly. And in the same kind of way of thinking, I think you need to put sort of two or three guys on Lynch and just kind of swarm him and take him down and give him a pounding onto his body for the whole game. Just try and, if we can contain those two, that's going to be a massive key in trying to win the game, which is easier said than done, because we see it twice a season, sometimes three times a season, and it's really bloody hard to do that. So
it
good
is.
Luck.
And I also think Gary's right. Let's treat this as a normal game and not as a revenge thing, because a regular season beating is not revenge. Revenge is when we beat them in an NFC Championship game. Yeah, that's a revenge game. This is just another game, you know. And I know that 49er fans worldwide will see it as retribution and redemption. Believe me, it won't be redemption.
It's not, no.
Not at all.
I think offensively, I think it's no good just giving easy handoffs to Hyde or to Hayne or to whoever the running back's going to be on first down, because we're going to get in a hole early if that's the case, because Seattle are going to be all over that in the same way that they were with Stewart of Carolina on Sunday night. The O-line has to give Kaepernick time to make the progressions, because, again, if he starts staring down his receiver, he's going to get picked off. there's no two ways about it.
Do you know, Brian, I don't... Ordinarily, when you've got two teams that are 2-4, and neither have really played as well as they could play or should play, you'd think that mistakes would be the marker for the outcome for this game. I think with this game, I think it would be down to nothing more than bread and butter execution. Whoever executes better rather than makes mistakes will win this game. I don't think this is going to be a game that's going to be decided by a number of turnovers, etc. I think it's who plays uncomplicated, high percentage football will win this game.
Yeah, I think we need to get Kaepernick running in this game as well and use that zone read, because he's done it against them before and had a big game in Seattle. So do it again. You know,
it's a great question, by the way.
It was. Yeah. Right.
Cam Newton, sorry, just to carry on, Cam Newton actually carved up Seattle at times on Sunday night, and he was throwing absolute fastballs at his receivers at times. Now, does that remind you of anybody who currently quarterbacks for the San Francisco 49ers? Yes, it does. Because if you don't give the DBs and the linebackers time to make an adjustment on the ball, and Kaepernick is accurate, we will move the chains against Seattle. But to quote a baseball term, we do need to come and play a perfect game or pitch our no-hitter on Thursday night. And all four of Seattle's defeats this season have come when they've been leading in the fourth quarter as well. So if we can hang with them into the fourth quarter, who knows?
We were discussing before that the 49ers don't have a two-minute drill. So we've decided, or I've decided, we're having one. Are you ready for it, guys?
Let's go.
Go for it.
Two minutes of quick fire questions, and that'll take us to the end of tonight's show. We'll start with you, Brian, first. The 49ers are one game off second place in the division and currently two games off the top of the division. Is it too early in the season to be thinking about that?
One game at a time.
One game
at a time.
Sounds good enough to me. Gary, big deal, little deal, or no deal? The stadium was noticeably missing a number of fans at the game.
I think it's no deal there. I think, you know, success breeds the fans come into the game. And I think, unfortunately, where the stadium's located, a lot of the people there, it's very, very corporate attraction. So, you know, while the team's not successful, they're not going to be filling it every single week.
Okay, Deepak, the 49ers are dead last across the league right now in points scored with an average of just 16.7 points per game. Is it something or is it nothing?
Nothing, because when you're dead last, you can only get better.
But is that not going to cause us problems going into game against high-scoring offenses?
Well, it depends on how well our defense plays against high-scoring offenses. And the reason why I say this is, in football, it's a cliche on any given Sunday. But if you look at results around the league, it's been almost every Sunday there's been an upset or a result that's just come straight out of the blue. So, I think as we improve and as we become more robust and solid as a team, we'll address our scoring. You know, I have confidence that we'll be able to do that.
Okay, last one then. Back to Gary. Reggie Bush was missing from the game again last night. Is he a bust?
No, I don't think so. I think this is, you know, the pattern across Reggie Bush's career for the last few years. And, you know, unfortunately, he's not at the peak of fitness. And I think he is still yet to come good. I think we'll see three or four good games out of him this season, and he'll have a couple of game-changing plays.
We got that in just in time, guys.
That was horrible.
I don't care. That is what is happening. That's it for today's show, guys. It's been absolutely fantastic, hasn't it, to get together and finally get this show in the bag.
Yeah, definitely. It's been really good to be back and be doing a slightly different format to what we've all done before.
Yeah, we've got plenty more to come. We've got some different stuff in the ether there that we're playing around with, different features that we're going to try and bring into the show, and we're going to get you, the listeners, a lot more involved, hopefully. With that in mind, you can follow us on Facebook. Just search Frequency 49 Show. We're also on Twitter at Frequency 49. Don't forget to tell all your friends about us. If they're not 49er fans, tell them about us and make them 49er fans. Guys, it's time to say goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye, everybody. And
thank you, everybody, for all your contributions and questions. Fantastic questions that were asked today.
And we're all feeling sorry for Deepak because he's a little bit under the weather. We won't say why. It was nothing to do with alcohol at all.
He went to drink it with his mate, Jack.
He was indeed.
On a Monday night. He deserves that hangover tomorrow morning.
Right, guys. That's it. It's the end of the show. On behalf of Gary Bryan and Deepak, I've been Paul McDonald. You've been the audience. And this has been the first ever episode of the Frequency 49 show. Bye for now.